Today we celebrate the Feast of the Exaltation of the Holy Cross. And this feast has a very interesting history, which actually precedes the actual event that's commemorated by it. There was a time when the Roman Empire became so big that they went through a period where they had two emperors, one for the east and one for the west. And one of these emperors was Maxentius, and he was not very highly regarded by either Christians or pagans. He persecuted the church, but he didn't treat the pagans a whole lot better. And St. Constantine the Great was at that time in Britain, and the Roman army decided to elect him as emperor. So they proclaimed him as emperor in Great Britain. And St. Constantine did not immediately go to war with Maxentius, but he tried to mediate some kind of a peace, but he was rebuffed at every turn. So he led his army down towards Rome, and a decisive battle was to come tomorrow. But he knew that Maxentius's forces outnumber his by about 2-1. But he had a vision of a cross in heaven and words inscribed by the cross that said, "By this sign, conquer." St. Constantine himself at that time was not a professing Christian, although his mother, Helen, was a Christian, and so he was not ignorant of the Christian faith. And so when he saw this sign, his soldiers saw it, but there was a dispute about what did this sign mean, because you have to keep in mind, we see the cross and we see a sacred symbol. But if you were to try to imagine the way a Roman who was not a Christian at that time would see the cross, you'd have to envision something like a symbol that was a hangman's noose or an electric chair, because the cross was a means of execution. It wasn't a glorious symbol to unbelievers. It was a sign of death. And so many of his soldiers thought, uh-oh, there's a cross in heaven, and that must be bad things for us, because people die on crosses. But Christ appeared to St. Constantine and told him, "Make an image of this sign and command that it be carried in front of the army, and not only Maxentius, but all your enemies will be overcome." And so St. Constantine ordered that a cross be made to be carried as a banner, and he ordered that the sign of the cross be inscribed on all their weapons, helmets, shields, and spears. And so when Constantine's army appeared, they were bearing this strange symbol that had never been seen, and all their shields were marked with a cross, which struck the other army as very strange. They had this battle, and by the power of the cross, St. Constantine's army defeated Maxentius. And as a matter of fact, Maxentius had erected a pontoon bridge across the river Tiber to go out and meet St. Constantine. And he had to go back and retreat across that same pontoon bridge. And as he did so, the bridge fell apart and he fell into the water himself and perished with many of his soldiers, just like Pharaoh in the Exodus. Prior to that battle, Maxentius had consulted the bearers of what was known as the Sibylline Books, which were prophecies by pagan oracles, but which even Christians acknowledge very often had some insights into things. You find church fathers that will make reference to them, not that they consider them to be the last word on anything, but very often their prophecies certainly were interesting. And in this case, the prophecies were usually very cryptic, and they usually didn't help the people who got them. It was only after the fact that you could see what they meant. But the oracle told Maxentius, "The enemies of Rome will die tomorrow." Well, little did he know that that meant him. And so St. Constantine came into Rome triumphantly, and he began to establish a unified Roman Empire under one emperor. And he fought a number of battles, and in each case, by the power of the cross, he overcame his enemies. So in Rome, he first erected a cross there, and he inscribed on the foot of that cross, "This city was delivered from the yoke of the tormentor by this saving sign." St. Constantine also legalized Christianity, and he eventually was baptized. There's different accounts about his baptism. He, at the very least, was made a catechumen. There are some sources that say he put off baptism until the day of his death, which, if he did so, was probably because, as emperor, he knew he had to do many things for which he would have to repent, and he wanted to put off baptism till the end. We won't comment on whether that's a good approach to baptism or not. I would say that it's probably not. But nevertheless, God dealt with St. Constantine where he was. He didn't understand everything, but he came to know Christ, and he came to defend the church. He first legalized Christianity, and then he actively began to promote it. St. Constantine also, in Constantinople, when he established the new capital of the Roman Empire there, built three crosses, and on each of those crosses he inscribed the words, Jesus Christ Conquers, which is where we get the symbol that we see on so many crosses that in English, for us looking at it with our alphabet, we would say it says IC, XC, and then Nika. But in Greek, that IC is actually I iota sigma, which is the first and last letter of Iusus, and then the X and the C are actually the chi and the sigma, which are the first and last letters of Christos. So it's Iusus Christos Nika, which Nika in Greek means conquer, which is where Nike is related to that, the goddess of victory. But in Greek, the word means victorious. So Jesus Christ Conquers, that's what that symbol means. His mother, as I mentioned, was a Christian, and she made a pilgrimage to the city of Jerusalem because she wanted to see the holy sites there. And she built many of the churches that to this day stand on the various holy places. But she wanted to know where the place that Christ was crucified, and also she wanted to find the cross. And she sought diligently, and they found an old Jewish man by the name of Judah, who knew where the place was, but it happened to be underneath a pile of rubble, and under that pile of rubble, on top of that, was built a temple to the goddess Venus that had been built by the Emperor Hadrian, who had attempted, he expelled all the Jews after the Bar Kokhba revolt. This was the second revolt the Jews waged against the Romans, and the Romans got tired of dealing with these angry Jews and kicked them all out of the Holy Land and forbid them to come into Jerusalem. And renamed the city from Jerusalem to Aelia, I believe. And so many of the sacred sites there had Roman temples built upon them because he actively was trying to erase the memory of both Judaism and Christianity. And so the empress had this temple destroyed, and they excavated and they found three crosses. And first there was a sick woman who they touched the cross to, and each the cross is in turn, and the one that was the true cross healed her instantaneously. And then there was also a dead man who was being carried in a funeral procession. As an added test, they placed the cross, each of the crosses, on the dead man, and again when the true cross was placed upon him, he was raised from the dead. And so this Jewish man who helped St. Helen find the cross, along with several other Jews with him, converted to Christianity, and this same man actually later became Patriarch of Jerusalem. He, in monasticism, took the name Kyriakos, and he was martyred by the Emperor Julian the Apostate, and he had his own fee, so he became a great saint of the church. But on this spot, the Church of the Holy Resurrection was built. In the English, it's usually referred to as the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. But in Greek and in Russian, it's referred to as the Church of the Resurrection. And just as an interesting historical side note, on PBS a few years ago, there was a documentary that was in the series The Secrets of the Dead, which has a very spooky beginning, but this is a particularly good episode. They had these archaeologists that were trying to determine where really was the tomb of Christ, because if you have been around Protestants or if you have been one, you know that the Protestants had this idea of the garden tomb that some British general discovered when the British were occupying Palestine. And this guy, with his Bible in hand, a very sincere man, tried to determine where Golgotha was and where the tomb of Christ was. And of course, in the Gospels, we're told that Christ was crucified outside the city. And so he figured, well, wherever the walls of the city are, I have to go outside of that. And then he found a hill that looked kind of like a skull because of erosion. He didn't think about the fact that after 2,000 years, it might not have looked that way 2,000 years ago. And he found a garden tomb nearby with a stone in front of it. And so he decided that that must be the tomb of Christ. And so Protestants to this day go there as if that's the place of the burial of Christ. But these archaeologists, who are not Orthodox or even Catholics, they were Protestants themselves, did a great deal of research on this, and they pointed out that the walls of the city that were at the time of General Gordon were not there at the time of Christ. So he was going by a false clue. And also on the site of the Church of the Holy Resurrection, they discovered that, as a matter of fact, this had been built upon an ancient tomb that was outside the walls of Jerusalem, and they found very ancient indications that from the earliest times Christians had recognized this as being the tomb of Christ. And you can imagine that the earliest Christians would have remembered where this was, and they found pre-Constantinian marks that indicated that this in fact was where Christians believed Christ to be buried. So even archaeologists have confirmed that, as a matter of fact, this is the place that Christ was crucified and rose from the dead. Now, when the true cross was found, as I mentioned, the Empress had the Church of the Holy Resurrection built, but the church was finished after her death. That anniversary was actually yesterday, but when the cross was brought into the Church of the Holy Resurrection, it was elevated by the patriarch. And as the people saw the cross, their spontaneous response was to say, in Greek, Kyrie eleison, Lord have mercy. And that's why if you go to a cathedral or a monastery and you see the full rite of the elevation of the cross, you'll see the bishop or the abbot elevating the cross, and there's many Lord have mercies that are sung during that rite. But there's one other thing about the cross that happened after this that is noteworthy, and that's that sometime later, during the reign of the Emperor Phocas, the Persian Empire invaded the Holy Land and captured Jerusalem. They slew many Christians, and they took the cross of Christ with them as a trophy, and they hung on to that cross for some 14 years. The Emperor Heraclius, who followed after Phocas, waged a war against the Persians to retake this land that had been conquered and also to get back the cross. But after many defeats at the hands of the Persians, he actually sent a delegation to the Persian king asking for terms of peace. But the Persian king was so arrogant that he refused to make peace, and so the emperor was forced to go into battle with him yet again, knowing that he was in a disadvantageous position. And so he called upon all the Christians to pray and to fast. And by the power of the cross, he went to battle against the Persians and defeated a superior force. And so for the next 7 years, he waged a war against the Persians that so devastated their country that finally the king of Persia sought terms of peace from the emperor. And one of the terms of peace was, okay, now you have to give us back the cross. So the emperor brought the cross of Christ back into Jerusalem. And when he was about to enter into the gate that led to the Church of the Holy Resurrection, he was stopped by an invisible force that he was not able to see. And the patriarch at that time was near the emperor, and he saw that this invisible barrier was in fact an angel that was standing in the gate. And the angel said to him, our maker did not carry his cross to this place arrayed as you are. Because the emperor, of course, was arrayed in his finest royal robes and in his crown, and he was carrying the cross of Christ. But when the patriarch informed the emperor of this, the emperor took off his royal robes. He put on the poorest garments that he was able to get his hands on. And then he carried the cross in all humility into the Church of the Resurrection, and the angel allowed him to pass. And so that's an important reminder. The cross is our strength, but also the cross is a symbol of the kind of humility that we should have, because there's one being in the universe for whom humility is not something that should be necessary, and that's God himself. He's the only being that has no reason to be humble, and yet nevertheless, for our sake, he humbled himself, and he suffered the most horrible death imaginable so that we might be saved. So may we be bold against our enemies, both visible and invisible, by the power of the cross, but may we also always emulate the one who was crucified thereon in his love, his humility, and his willingness to lay down his life for us. Amen.